Kinzer, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, my name is Adam Kinzer. I'm from Lee County, Virginia, and I represent Michael Dwayne Durham, the appellate in this matter.
Is Lee County where Big Stone Gap is?
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's the county seat?
That's Wise County. We're the next county over, next county west.
Okay.
We appealed on behalf of my client and alleged that the district court here erred by granting the defendant's motion for summary judgment and finding that the defendant, Davey Horner, was shielded from tort liability because he acted reasonably and enjoyed qualified immunity. The timeline of what happened to my client, he was living in Memphis, Tennessee, which would be about 12 to 14 hours away from Wise County, Virginia. Mr. Horner did some controlled drug buys on November 29th, 2005, December 3rd, 2005, and December 16th, 2005.
Now, when you say Mr. Horner did controlled drug buys, he was buying the drugs himself, or did he had a
CI
informant that was doing it for him?
Yes, Your Honor.
Which one?
He had an informant buying the drugs for him.
Okay.
The informant advised Officer Horner that he was buying drugs from a Michael Durham.
Let me stop you there. According to the information, it looks like in the JA, he was identified as Michael Dwayne Durham.
I think that's incorrect.
Well, Judge. I'm looking first of all at page 73. This is a motion for summary judgment filed by Mr. Horner and lists undisputed facts. It says that suspect in the CI identified as Michael Dwayne Durham. And then when I look at the affidavit that's provided on page 239 by Mr. Horner, it says undisputed facts set out in the motion for summary judgment were true and accurate. So what is there in the record to contest that the name given by the CI officer was Michael Dwayne Durham? Well, you got one side saying that's what the CI told him.
I would contend that I don't know that there's anything in the record, but I would contest that, Judge. He was given the name of Michael Durham, and there were several Michael Durhams. I think he testified in.
So you say that allegation on page 73 is wrong?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. But
is there anything in the record to contest it, to show it's wrong, or to make it an issue of fact?
Not that I'm aware of right now, but I don't have the record in front of me.
Okay, you can go ahead.
Okay. So Officer Horner takes this information. He hands it over to the Drug Task Force. They give him an accurate report, which is in the record.
Now, this is after they did the three buys.
Yes, sir. Yes, Your Honor.
He had three separate buys on three separate days.
Yes.
In 2005.
Yes. He receives the accurate report, hands that over to a different officer who I don't remember who his name was. This officer actually goes before the grand jury and gets an indictment against a Michael Durham.
And that accurate report
listed my client.
Listed Michael Dwayne Durham.
Yes. My client, Michael Dwayne Durham, lived in Wise County, Virginia in the early 90s. He was doing construction, and he got a DUI while he was there. So that's how he was in their system. But he had not lived there since 1999. He's in Memphis, Tennessee, receiving Social Security, Supplemental Security Income benefits. There's a fugitive warrant put out for his arrest.
That fugitive warrant was actually three warrants
for three
that were issued on three separate indictments.
Yes.
That were returned against Michael Dwayne Durham in Wise County?
Yes, Your Honor.
In Virginia for three separate drug sales?
Yes. Social Security notifies him that they're discontinuing his benefits because there's a fugitive warrant for his arrest, three fugitive warrants. He calls Wise County, asks them, you know, what's going on. They tell him, turn yourself in, they'll take care of it. He did that, turned himself into the Memphis police, and they transported him to Wise County. He spent approximately 90 days in jail.
He spent 90 days in jail. When he got to Wise County, he was appointed a lawyer.
Yes.
And whose fault was it? Nothing happened in 90 days.
You weren't the lawyer who was appointed to represent him, were you?
No, Your Honor.
Did his lawyer ever go see him?
I think his lawyer, he did, but it was later on, several months after he'd been incarcerated.
He figured out he was maybe the wrong guy, and he went and talked to the prosecutor and convinced him he was the wrong guy.
Yes, that attorney.
The prosecutor nollied the three indictments.
Yes. His lawyer at that time, he obtained some cell phone records, and that's what he actually gave to the Commonwealth attorney to indicate that my client, Mr. Durham, Michael Dwayne Durham, was in Memphis, Tennessee during the time of the three controlled drug buys.
But it couldn't have been him.
Yes.
So it's a case of mistaken identity.
Yes.
And did Mr. the only defendant in the case is Mr. Durham?
Mr. Horner.
Mr. Horner, I'm sorry. You're representing Mr. Durham. He was the arrestee. Mr. Horner is the chief of police?
He was the chief of police of the Big Stone Gap Police Department at the time.
And did Mr. Horner go to the grand jury and...
He did not.
Lie about your man?
He did not. He simply just
said... He didn't even go to the grand jury?
No, he did not.
Who went to the grand jury?
A separate member of the drug task force.
What was his evidence before the grand jury?
That the CI gave them the name of Michael Durham and performed three controlled drug buys that were recorded.
Is there a transcript of the testimony before the grand jury that's in this record?
No.
So then we don't know what was presented to the grand jury?
Correct.
So there's no record of what was in the grand jury?
I believe that's correct.
It's all surmised, what you...
Yes, yes, it is.
Nobody knows what was in the grand jury. And Mr. Horner did not testify before the grand jury.
He did not.
Was he chief of police at the time?
Yes.
But the grand jury returned three indictments on which three warrants were issued, and that resulted in your client being incarcerated, you say wrongly, for 3 months.
Yes.
Have you got a case where they let somebody get sued under 1983 that didn't testify in front of the grand jury or something like that?
Your Honor, our theory is it's not necessarily what
did he do?
It's what he didn't do.
What did he do? What did he do to do your man wrong?
He set forth the chain of events that led to his arrest and did no investigation.
He had this CI go out and buy drugs three times.
Yes. And when he received
that's probably undisputed. He did that.
Yes.
But he came up with the wrong name, you say.
Yes.
But he came up with the name according to the what's on page 73, and according to what's on the indictment, it's the same name.
It's the same name, but the wrong name.
As your man. It's the name of your man.
Yes. But the wrong man.
But the fellow that didn't let him stay in jail for 9 days was his court-appointed lawyer.
Could make that argument.
Pardon?
You can make that argument, yes.
Well,
I mean,
on the face of it, his court-appointed lawyer didn't go see him. As soon as he went to see him, he figured it out and told the prosecutor, and that was the end of it.
Well, he had to get the cell phone records.
What's that?
He had to get cell phone records to submit to the Commonwealth attorney.
But it that all happened really fast. It's my recollection of reading this record. As soon as his lawyer saw him, which was a long time after he was appointed, he figured out they got the wrong guy, and he won the case. I mean, that doesn't happen very often to defense lawyers, where you come up where you're representing an absolutely innocent person.
That's correct.
Who's been dragged into the thing by mistake somewhere along the line, I guess.
Yes.
And the prosecutor agreed.
Yes.
That down the line, you sued everybody, and the only ones left is the chief of police,
yes,
who didn't even testify in front of the grand jury.
Right.
How you gonna get around that?
He was the investigating officer.
Have you got any law that'll sustain a 1983 case on those kinds of facts?
I think the courts have talked about when an officer is incompetent, they're not shielded by qualified immunity. And I believe here, Officer Horner's actions.
Where was he incompetent?
Okay, when he received the accurate report from the state police, it identified my client as a man being younger than the suspect he was looking at. It showed that...
That report supports him. The accurate, whatever that is, that says Michael Dwayne?
It says Michael Dwayne.
Well, so he got an independent third party that supplies information on criminal records.
Yes.
That identifies your guy.
As living in Memphis, Tennessee, had not lived in Wise County.
There was also some information from the CI.
About a Jeep.
About a Jeep with Tennessee tags.
Stolen Tennessee tags.
Well, there was a Tennessee tag.
Yes.
All right. Did they know it was stolen when they saw it?
I believe
but the CI didn't know it was stolen. He saw the fella who was selling drugs driving a Jeep with Tennessee plates.
Yes.
Okay.
And the officer.
And the accurate report shows up with Michael Dwayne Durham being from Tennessee.
Memphis, Tennessee.
It seems like, I thought he lived in Memphis, Tennessee, you told us.
Memphis, Tennessee, yes. That's quite a distance from Wise County.
What's the other end of Tennessee?
It'd be Kingsport, Bristol, Johnson City.
Yeah, I mean, it is a long way. It's one side of Tennessee or the other, but it's still Tennessee.
Yes, but it also showed him as owning a Jaguar, previously owning a Jaguar, a Lincoln Town Car, and a Plymouth Voyager, not a Jeep. It was a different age. His Tennessee driver's license was issued in Memphis, Tennessee. I mean, just the totality of looking at this report was not... It should have sent off alarm bells that they were arresting the wrong individual.
So is that your best case, that the accurate report, if I'm pronouncing it right,
yes,
led to all this?
It should have made the officer double check some of this. I mean, our argument here is he did nothing.
He did nothing. He should have checked it.
He should have followed up.
And there's a warning on there that says that these reports aren't always accurate.
Right.
Even though they call them accurate.
He had a name.
That's the name of it.
Yes. Yes. He had a he got a name from a confidential informant. He took that name, got the accurate report, and then it caused this man to be arrested and incarcerated.
How did he call? He didn't cause him to get arrested. He didn't go to the grand jury. He got arrested because the grand jury returned three indictments and the court issued three bench warrants.
Yes.
Now, what happens when a bench warrant issues? Somebody gets arrested.
Right.
I mean, officers have to comply with the obligation to execute warrants, don't they?
Yes.
That's part of their job. So, but Mr. Horner didn't execute the warrants.
No, but he was the investigating officer who did no investigation, handed the name over to...
Well, he was the chief of police.
He was the chief of police.
That sounds like he has a big job, but now Big Stone Gap's not very big. It might not be like a real large police force.
No, it's not. It's not.
But he's still a supervisor. Pretty hard to get a supervisor, too, in the 1983 case. You looked at the town law up?
No.
We got some cases on that. But here you got the grand jury standing between this fella and the arrest.
Right, and there's some law
that's even stretching it maybe a little bit more.
But in those cases, they were saying there was probable cause to arrest the individual. There was never probable
cause. Well, there's probable cause when the grand jury returns an indictment. There's no question of probable cause here. There's probable cause. A grand jury indictment, on the face of it, it's probable cause. Now, if they got a misnomer on it,
right.
That's what you're saying they got, is a misnomer.
Yes.
And a misnomer is a clerical error.
I would argue.
And under the rules, it can even be corrected. It's not even an amendment to the indictment. But they got the wrong middle name, right?
Yes.
The real guy was Michael Durham, right?
Michael David Durham.
Michael David. So it's the difference between David and Dwayne.
Yes.
And they got a misnomer and ended up with your guy rather than Michael David.
That's correct.
Whatever happened to him, do you know? Did they get him and put him in the same case?
They found him afterwards, but he's not been prosecuted.
He's not going to be prosecuted?
No, I think he lives in Stickleyville, actually. And actually called our office.
So the only one that's in trouble over it is the chief of police.
Yes.
Who didn't even go to the grand jury?
That's my case.
Let me ask you, do you know, what was the education level you were going?
High school. He was a laborer or construction contractor until he became disabled.
He was on Social Security disability.
Yes.
And he spent 90 days in jail?
Approximately, yes.
And he waived extradition?
Yes.
And once it was the evidence that ultimately showed that he was not the right guy was fairly minimal, wasn't it? I mean, it was pretty quick.
Yes.
It just looks to me, I don't know if there's a remedy for you. The problem with your client is he was poor.
That's exactly
right. He was not very well educated. This would not have happened to an individual who was well educated and able to afford a lawyer who had never left. But this happens to poor people. And the issue that I think that you ought to hone in is, to what extent is there some duty to those who are without? Because something is wrong with this case. This has not happened to the ordinary citizen out there who is able to get a lawyer. At first, you never would waive extradition. You would contest it right then. But he has no money. He's poor. He doesn't know what's going on here. And he's been identified as the wrong man under circumstances that could easily have been corrected. And so the question is, does that rise to the level of an action that is cognizable under 1983 when the police has evidence? Is there something more they should do when they're dealing with an individual like this, knowing full well if you had a lawyer, this, you know, what could be checked out pretty quickly? How do you represent someone like that without bringing those factors to the forefront and making this your case? Because if you walk down this path that Judge King has walked down, which I think is correct legally, where he's gone with this, you can't win this case. But that's not your case. How do you make that your case, or do you?
Our entire theory.
There's something wrong with this case. There's an injustice here that has been committed against a man for simple reasons. He is poor. He cannot afford a lawyer. He's in a situation where the evidence that shows that he is not the man that they are seeking is easy to get, and he never leaves home.
That's correct.
But the reason he does, he's poor, he's fairly uneducated, he doesn't have anything else.
That's right.
But that's not your case.
I think, though, for us to win, you would have to find that this officer's actions were unreasonable or not objectively reasonable.
And he doesn't have to consider those factors I just gave you?
I think he would, yes.
I understand where you're going, but I'm not even saying that would get you to win the case, but it would seem to me, and that's a compelling story to tell.
It's a compelling story.
But I haven't heard you bring it up. You're dealing with it as though he is just, as though they went to arrest a judge or a senator or a doctor in another state, and they checked all of these things, they did these things, but the whole business about the corroborating evidence, and it was so easy just to show this man was not the man. Anybody else would never have walked out of that state. You've never been incarcerated.
Did he have a lawyer in Tennessee?
No.
He didn't. Did they offer him one? You know?
Not that I'm aware of.
But that's exactly right. If they'd had an extradition, they'd have proof. I understand two things. One, that there's probable cause, and second identity. He's the person named in the indictment. And so he waived that. He waived his identity when he went off to Virginia, and then he got a lawyer. I mean, I can't for the life of me understand what happened to his lawyer up there in Wise County. I mean, you're giving him a walk, but he let him sit there in jail for 3 months. It's a shame.
But I'm not sure there's a remedy for it. Unless you make some case that convinces us. I don't think you've done that, not from that perspective.
Well, again, I would just, our position would be that the officer's actions, he was incompetent in setting forth this chain of events that did affect, as you said, an uneducated, poor individual.
What do you think the standard is? Intentional misconduct? Mere negligence?
There are cases.
Reckless misconduct? What is it?
I don't think Virginia recognizes negligence.
This is a 1983 case.
Right. Intentional misconduct, there's cases out there on that, but I think the standard is an officer is not protected when they are incompetent. I think there's some cases that say that. And here, this officer, he did nothing. He got the name from the informant, and then...
He got the name, and according to the page 73 here, he got the right name. That being the name of your client, it was the wrong name of the culprit. It should have been David rather than Dwayne.
But it's just a
mistake. And your man was an unfortunate victim of a mistake. People make mistakes. And the question is whether you're going to hold this chief of police personally liable for a mistake.
in a middle name that resulted in him being in jail 3 months, primarily because his lawyer never would go see him and figure out who he was. I mean, it looks to me like the prosecutor acted very properly.
He did, once the evidence
once he found out.
Yes.
Maybe he should have had some obvious, but I don't know. If the other guy had a lawyer, usually they depend on the lawyer.
Okay, let's hear from Attorney Mr. Horner.
Good morning to the court, please. I'm Henry Kuhlingstout from Big Stone Gap, Virginia, and my grandmother on my father's side was from Stickleyville, Virginia. So let me begin by answering some of the questions that Judge Wynn opposed. The first that I'd like to say is something that Judge King had indicated. Mr. Durham did have counsel, and in fact, the counsel was...
In Tennessee?
No, he had a counsel in Virginia.
I know, right.
He had counsel in Virginia, and that was a counsel who was originally part of the suit brought by Mr. Durham.
Well, he was sued, too?
No. He was representing Mr. Durham.
He was the plaintiff. Oh, okay.
Yes, he was the plaintiff. So he did have counsel. And the counsel, the counsel was appointed in December, 3 months prior to the time that the information was given to the prosecuting attorney. The prosecuting attorney looked at the records, and also he said he looked at the case itself and then decided to nolpros. Also, Mr. Durham had a friend, Mr. David Bayard, who knew him in Memphis, Tennessee, and it was David Bayard who called the authorities, the Wise County Sheriff's Department in Wise County, to find out, to say that it just couldn't be the right man. And the person in Wise County, there's a statement by an officer that said he remembers someone calling him and him saying you'd have to follow that up with the court or something like that. So Mr. Durham did have a friend, but he never followed up after that. Also, Mr. Durham himself, he said that he was asked in depositions, he was asked, well, did you ever complain about this? Did you ever make complaints of your innocence when you were in jail? He said, no. Did you ever call anybody else? No. Did Mr. Byrd Bayard ever communicate with his friend, Mr. Durham, while he was 3 months in jail, or to assist him any further than calling the Wise County Sheriff's Department? And the answer was no. So, I'm not sure. It's certainly, he was probably a person of limited education, Mr. Durham, and he was on Social Security as far as money, but he did have appointed counsel in Virginia, and who was not that far from, he was in the Duffield Jail, the regional jail in Duffield, and Mr. Ingram, who was his attorney, was in Norton, and they go all the time to the regional jail. That's the only jail, I mean, that's the local jail. And so they go all the time to visit people. So he had counsel readily available.
Norton's in a different county, isn't it?
Norton. Norton is a city unto itself, a city of the second class.
Yes. Okay.
But it's in Wise County. It's surrounding, excuse me.
Norton's in Wise County.
Yes.
And these offenses occurred in Wise
County.
Same county. Okay.
That is correct. Also, it's interesting to note that, or important to note, that even though my client is really upset that if this happened, it's yet to be determined which Durham was the one there, you know, for sure, which was the one who did the, who was selling the drugs. And so now we need to turn to this. This is a case, this is not a case where you see, in some cases you say that the court said, well, there's no probable cause because they weren't even there. They got a tip on the telephone. What type of tip was that? What did they know about that? This is a case in which Officer Horner, a police officer Horner, who was also attached to a part of the drug task force people, a separate outfit, Mr. Horner, being a part of that, he had a thing in his ear. In other words, he could hear what was going on in the house. He was involved as the confidential informant was going into the house. There are cases that say, well, goodness, you don't have any evidence of what he did. Well, it's clear that this Durham, Mr. Durham, went into this these people's houses or went to see them on three separate occasions, and bought drugs. And it's established in their records that the drugs were bought.
It is clear also that it was not this Michael Wayne Durrell that went in that house on those three occasions, isn't it?
I don't think so, because it's never been proved.
So you're now maintaining there is some chance that this man wasn't in fact improperly identified? But, it's not this other guy named Michael David Durrell?
There's nothing in the record. The record states...
Couldn't the CI tell you that by simply showing him a picture of the two? Couldn't you? I mean, this is...
That is correct. That is correct.
Why wouldn't you do that? Why would you stand before us now and try to make an argument that this man could, in fact, been the one to do it when you know full well he didn't do it? You have got to have already taken the photos back. It may seem like a good legal argument, but as a matter of
fact,
he didn't do it.
I think the evidence goes that he did not do it. But what I'm saying is...
Evidence, it's not just the evidence, it's the fact of the matter. The only person that identified him is the CI.
That is correct.
And if you showed him a picture of this man, which I'm clear you probably have done by now.
Yes.
Or somebody, he told you that's not the man.
Yes.
So why would you
Why
would you stand before us now and try to allude, well, we don't really know who it was.
Well, I don't, but all I'm saying is the Officer Jones.
You don't need to go there. You've got the law going the other way with you. You're just not helping me with that.
No.
You may be helping the other, just not me.
No.
Argue that kind of a point that this man, that there's no other evidence other than he's not the one.
No. The evidence from Jones is taking the picture, Officer Jones, taking the picture to the CI. The CI said, that's the man. In other words, David Durham.
Yes.
Okay.
And the way you identified this particular one, the one who's now the subject here, is that you got the name, at least according to Mr. Horner, Michael Dwayne Durham.
From the CI.
And what else did you have? Was that it?
We had that. We had the fact that we took that information as
anything else that would describe this individual in Memphis other than his name. It's not his age, because there's a 20-year difference. There's nothing else corroborating, but you got that name, Michael Dwayne Durrell. That's it?
I don't think there's a 20-year difference. Michael Dwayne Durham is 49. The Michael David Durham was around 55. So there's no 20-year difference at all. And what Mr. Horner did was to take what Police Officer Horner did was to take the name.
Just the name.
I'm just starting there.
Yes.
Take the name to the Drug Task Force people, which is a part of, I think it's attached to the state police.
Yes.
Which was what he was told to do. That was his job as a part of the DTF.
And he couldn't have gotten any other corroborating information. Nothing else other than just the name.
Then they gave him a Social Security number.
Based on the name.
On the name.
On the condition there's only one person in the United States named that name.
It's a very unusual name for our part of the country anywhere. They took that name.
Is it the only one in the country?
It was the one that came up in
there's
the
accurate. There's only one Michael Dwayne Durham in the entire United States.
I don't know. I do know that when they gave him the Michael Dwayne Durham, they gave him a Social Security number and an address.
Once you get the Social Security number, the sled is on the path then. I understand that. What I'm trying to do is to understand how do you match up the name with that Social Security number with just the name from a CI and nothing else? Is there no other opportunity to corroborate at least that we're going after the right person who's in another state?
Right. Okay, the DTF, or the Drug Task Force people, do what they, at Richard Stallard said, this is what we do. You give us a name, we'll give you a Social Security number and address. Mr. Horner then went to do corroboration. He went to get an accurate report.
I don't want to belabor that, but
I'm sorry.
Try to understand there's got to be something else they want than just the name. I mean, you could have a name that would be John Smith.
Mm-hmm.
And you put it in this thing, you've got to find 1,000 John Smiths. How do you pick out the one for the Social Security number is what I'm trying to understand. just on a name and nothing else.
Well, I don't know what the drug task force people do when you give them that.
But do you know what the responsibility is on the person who's providing just a name?
The responsibility on that person would be to do some work to corroborate the name and address that you have been given to see if it makes sense to you.
That's what I want to know. And what was the corroboration?
He went to Accurent, first of all, which is a computerized
which is used by law enforcement officials.
What I'm talking about corroboration.
Yes.
I'm not talking about corroborating that this name belongs to a social security number or something. I'm talking about corroborating that that name is the person you want. In other words, that this name and the person you are now seeking are the same. What is the corroborating thing there?
For the name itself. You were told by the confidential informants who you had trusted, which were allowed, there's no dispute, but that they were reliable confidential informants. They told you the name was Michael Dwayne Durham. That's what you had.
That confidential informant could have said that name was
Michael David Durham.
Ronald Reagan. And you would have put it in and found the president and then sent him a restaurant to him.
Well, if we knew it was
Ronald. Because he told you that name. That's all you did. He just told you the name.
Told you the name. And then you took the information that the Social Security number would give you by going to Accurent. And then you were able to see in Accurent
that
this fellow had lived.
Once you get to that step, I see where you go with it. But
okay.
My problem is getting to the Michael Dwayne Durham name and using that as a basis to go get a person whose name is Michael Dwayne's Social Security number, and then using that as a basis to go and issue warrants.
All right, let me
help you a little bit. Then your client also find out this person had a Tennessee address.
That's from Accurant.
That's right. He found out a Tennessee address, and the car that's being driven has allegedly stolen Tennessee.
That is correct.
You also found out that he had prior drug offenses.
Yes,
in
Mississippi.
Pending drug offenses.
Yes.
Which is consistent with the information you had
as to
the purchases that your man had listened to.
Yes.
Okay. So this is the backwards.
And you found out that he had lived in Big Stone Gap.
Big Stone Gap and Smithfield, Virginia, even before that. But in answer to your question, Judge Wynn.
Well, I'll make sure I get this point because I think I see where this is going. What has happened here is you got a name, you then go and you find out an individual, and he has some characteristics that are consistent with that you have seen. So you don't have corroboration from the CI or the event of where it occurred. Your corroboration is coming with, well, this guy has a drug offense, or he has a car that was stolen, or that, and therefore he must be this guy, so that's enough to give him a warrant.
Now let's back up. Let's be exactly where you want me to be, or where you want me to address. Let's say that Michael Dwayne Durham, the name came back from the drug task force, computer base, or however they do it, and it said, here's a Social Security number, but we have no Virginia address for this. The only address we have for somebody like this is in California. And if you look at the Social Security number, you're going to find that this fella is 18 years old, or you're going to find he's 80 years old.
You can rule him out.
Now, you can rule him out then. So if he gets the information, in other words, what came back was a person who had lived in Big Stone Gap, and in fact, they gave him a post office box at Big Stone Gap. That came from the drug task force people. But had they come back and said, number one, we don't have any, there's nobody in our database by Michael Dwayne Durham, which probably wouldn't have. But they found a person, and they found a person with Virginia, specifically Big Stone Gap address. Now that is something, otherwise the drug task force would say, wait, the only person we got is California, New Jersey, Rhode Island, somewhere like that.
So I'm going to ask just one more line of question, and I'm going to turn it loose out, because I'm trying to understand. This was a controlled drug buy.
Yes,
that
sir.
Was set up by the drug task force.
Yes.
With a CI, who the CI, in a circumstance where the CI met with this individual. Is that right?
That is correct.
But the task force folks never saw the individual.
Correct.
And they made no recording, there's no voice recognition, none of that stuff there.
They heard, there was
a
wire.
That.
My,
But they couldn't identify the voice enough to say this was a guy. So it's not a
They knew it was a man who fit this 49 to 50-year-old person man.
So, but as I understand it, in order to go after an individual, you can set up a patrol by, make no effort to identify who in fact is the person. You don't see the person going in the house. You don't see the car that they're driving. You don't see anything else that identifies who this person is. The CI meets with a person, drug task force, doesn't even know what's in there. He comes out, gives a name, you take that name and you run it. And then you go find corroborating stuff on the report. Is that what happens?
The fact that what happened in this case, you had an informant who you relied upon and who had given you reliable information in the past.
I'm with you on that.
Okay.
The only thing I'm trying to understand is how do you set up a patrol by and you see nothing corroborating or make no effort to find some corroborating evidence on the identity. And when you do find the person, if he shows up on this report, you don't just take a picture of the person because, as the officer says, I'm not 100% it's him, but this is a citizen that you've decided you're going to arrest in another state. And it wouldn't take much, in this day and age, it takes almost nothing to take a picture, whip it across the internet or whatever, and says, is this the guy? Was that ever done, and could it have been done?
It was not, and it could not have been. The evidence on the record is that today, 2010, when the depositions were taken in this case, Officer Horner said, I can go to VDOT, and I can, Virginia Department of Transportation, and I can get a picture. Many times he says, the drug task force people will give me a picture. In this case, there was no picture.
So you couldn't have gotten a picture of this man, but you can get Social Security to stop his disability payments.
Well, didn't do that.
But I'm saying it happens. I mean, so the weed part is sort of like the way it all works. You can stop his Social Security payments. You can issue warrants for his arrest. You can pick him up. You can do all these things, even put him in jail for 90 days. And if he doesn't say, I'm not the guy or doesn't protest, you never think. All we got to do is take a picture of this guy. And because we've never seen him, only the CI has seen him.
Okay.
And just show him the picture. If he sees the picture, he says, not the guy.
Okay.
And he's gone.
On TV, you can have something in your pocket and you can take pictures now of who's out there. That isn't the case that we're dealing with. We're dealing with a police officer in Big Stone Gap, Virginia, who's sitting in a car somewhere. And there's three criminal acts going on in a house.
I'm aware of the limited technology.
And he can't say, by the way, come out, let me take a picture.
That's not my question. My question has to be, when you finally think you have the man, how difficult was it even then to simply take a picture of him and show it to the CI? I take it the CI is still living and he's still available.
Yes.
Why wouldn't you do it?
Well, why didn't the attorney do that? Officer Horner never heard anything.
People who are innocent don't have to prove their innocence of it. You have to. if he's not the guy, you have sort of a duty to say you've arrested the right man. And if all it takes for you to do is take a picture of him and says, is this the guy? Maybe he would have been locked up for a day or two, maybe even a week. But you certainly wouldn't have gone through extradition and all of that, those expense and everything involved. How simple is that?
But that isn't where we are in qualified immunity. The case law is that the officer does not have a responsibility to prove that he got the wrong person. He has a responsibility if he knows, if he had taken a picture and checked it and thought, oh, this isn't Michael Dwayne Durham.
He has an obligation. He doesn't have a responsibility to prove he got the wrong person. Does he have a responsibility to ensure he got the right person?
He has a responsibility to determine, based on the evidence that he normally relies upon and that he finds trustworthy, to determine that there's reasonable suspicion, that there's reasonable cause, that this individual that the CI told me about was the person who I was listening to. And when I get each one of those bias, that's his responsibility. And nobody told him, nobody even suggested to him that it was the wrong person. And you're talking about Social Security. The reason Social Security got that information was based on his name and Social Security number. And he was doing what he, everything to him was reasonable. I don't see anybody could say that it wasn't reasonable for him to do what he did, because that's what he is told to do, to bring the information. And he was on the scene, on the site. And I can understand, Your Honor, saying, well, he didn't take a picture of him. I'm saying he couldn't take a picture of him. They do try to put pictures together. And even if he had gone to VDOT, which you can do today, you can make a
not
push about
it. Not the picture of Michael David, not the picture of Michael Dwayne is what I was asking. Why would you take a picture of Michael Dwayne and simply show it? Particularly if there's some indication he's not the right guy.
That's a good question. My client, Davy Horner, if there had ever been any question, he would have gone to that jail in Duffield and said, I've got to check this out. He's saying I put down some information and got him. He didn't want that. He doesn't want that.
He doesn't know it. He's relying entirely on the CI. And the CI is just given a name. And there's no connection ever been made between the person that actually was arrested and the name, other than just a name.
A name and the information that the Accurent and the NCIC report gave that corroborated that name and address. I think I'm
okay. I believe you're out of town. Let's hear from Mr. Kinzer, who had time on the
only thing I would submit is just what you were touching on, Judge Wynn, is he never corroborated any of this. And that's unreasonable. And because it's unreasonable, he doesn't get to benefit from qualified immunity. I mean, there was some corroboration.
It doesn't necessarily mean your client would win a trial. It just means that he wouldn't have the benefit of having qualified immunity.
That's correct.
So if he even went to trial, you still could prove all these things.
Yes. But at least let a jury determine, you know, what the merits of the case.
You got to prove more than just unreasonableness, though. You got to prove something. You got a heavier burden than that in a 1983 case, don't you? You got recklessness or something, or intentional misconduct.
There's a language out there for, and I cited in my brief, an officer who's blatantly incompetent. And due to his inaction and not corroborating this evidence, I believe that's what this arises to. I mean, there was some evidence that it was a Tennessee address, but not a Memphis, Tennessee address. It's quite different than a Tennessee address locally in Southwest Virginia, being Kingsport, Johnson City, something like that. I mean, Memphis is a long way away.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, thank you, Mr. Kinzer. We'll come down and greet counsel and then go into our last case.